Florin Ermitzer, thanks for talking to the Cambridge Service Alliance about your new jointly authored paper, Engineering Services, Unpacking Value Exchange. Why did you write this paper now?
We were asked to provide or to participate in a forthcoming book which is about high-value manufacturing. I was asked to basically put together the value part for service engineering.
And your joint authors are?
Veronica Martinez and Andy Neely. We wrote up the chapter and we really started to realize that we were really unpacking value exchange in services and what it actually means for the manufacturer, but as well for the customer. Because the customer obviously can internally create and receive a lot of value from the manufacturer by them offering the right services for them.
And you have a lot of expertise here at the Cambridge Service Alliance going back many years, but how do you define value? It does have different meanings, and you speak of it being a two-way flow.
First of all, value is a very, very complex concept to grasp in the first place. The problem realistically is that what is value to me isn't value to you. It's not really tangible, or it's not an equation that is equal to X or Y or Z. I can perceive value, which is already very, very different. So when I realize as a manager that my company gets certain value out of, for example, a service contract or buying a product or something, I can actually start managing around it. But often value is conceived as intangible and not even discussed. So we talk about loss of value that could actually create revenue streams or income. We talk about value slippage. So value in general is a very, very complicated concept. So what we've started to say is that if I'm a manufacturer and I have a customer, then me as a manufacturer, I create value. This value then ideally gets captured by my customer. But in this day and age, especially in services, as we know, the customer creates value as well. And me as a manufacturer, I can capture this value. So this, in the most simplest form, can be customer feedback. In service, there's always an interaction, a back and forth of discussions, not only with salespeople, but as well with the service engineers that are on the ground, and that basically give you information. And if you capture this information, if you take on this information, you can better your processes and you can better as well the way that you create value for your customer in itself.
And are those relationships changing? The manufacturer-customer relationship is being redefined now. Is that because of new technologies which are more interactive? You talked about feedback. We all know you can tweet about the restaurant you've just eaten at or the new car you've just bought.
From our perspective, it changes a lot simply because most machines now give a lot of information of them. So there's many, many data points in, for example, diggers or machinery that is used in quarries and building sites. So you can use this information, you can capture this information, you can obviously have an influence on how you produce the machine in the future. So then your next generation of machinery, there may be an influence. But additionally, you can as well start to really understand the business model of your customer. One example that we're using here quite a lot is a harvester. If you're a farmer or if you're someone dealing with harvesting in the first place and you have a harvester, then this harvester has a very, very different value set depending on the time of the year when you use it. So outside harvesting time, this harvester doesn't really have any form of value for you. During harvesting season, however, it's of very, very high value. So if it doesn't work or doesn't function for 2 hours, there's a lot of value being lost because you couldn't actually use it for 2 hours. If you think about your servicing business, if you understand these cycles of your customer, if you understand the business model of your customer in very much detail, you have the opportunity to really create more value for them and to bind them closer to you because you are the person or you're the company that understands value behind their business model. One example to the harvester, if in harvesting season your servicing engineer goes out and turns around to the farmer and says, look, I need to take the machine in, it's going to take 5 days to repair it, it's probably not really the answer that the farmer really would like to have. If, however, he turns around and says, look, I know it's harvesting season, I take a piece of string and a rubber band and I fix the machine and it's going to work for the next 2 days, but then afterwards we really have to take it in. So as soon as harvesting season is over, we really need to take it in and we need to do a major overhaul. Farmer is obviously going to be very, very happy with you and very, very content with the value that you've created for him because he can use this machine for the 2 more days.
Some people might call it value, others might call it business efficiency. It's more efficient.
Yes, it's more efficiency, but it's a very interesting way of innovating, right? By offering a certain service level or by offering a certain service guarantee or by offering a way in which you deal with your business, you're actually within your company innovating for your customer in a way. You're innovating to make their processes stronger and support their business as well. Hence the understanding of the business model.
So this understanding, it's more interactive. It can be enabled by new technology. The driver of the harvester could tweet his hourly actions, which field he's ploughing in and how much he's harvesting. But is it bringing the customer and the firm closer?
Yes, of course. And I believe not only by technology, so not only by digital information streams, right? But it gets far much more personal as well, because if you're increasing the service levels towards your customers, you have a lot more members of staff on the ground. So if you're providing on a monthly basis a service to a set of machinery, and hence on a monthly basis there's a service engineer on the ground, your service engineer will actually see your customer far much more often than your sales team will. So it's quite likely that your service engineer actually has a lot of information about the customer and has a lot of knowledge about the customer, how they use the machine, how do they internally tick, right? What's important for them in their internal processes? What type of company are they? Are they very much revenue focused? Are they very much quality focused? Every company internally works very, very different. So your sales team may know that as well, but obviously a syncing between the sales team and the servicing team is really something that is quite neglected in industry at the moment as we see it.
Well, let's just spool back 20 years. If I bought a harvester, the sales team would have sold it and that would have been it. I wouldn't know how much the combine harvester was used, how it was used, when it was used, or be able to predict that there may be a fault in it next year. It's a radical rethinking and restructuring of these relationships.
Actually, from that aspect, it's very, very radical. I always think about if the sales team actually celebrates that they make a sale, and then afterwards the sales team basically marches on and does something else. In many companies, however, if you only provide spare parts to the machine which you've sold throughout the lifetime of the machine, you can create more revenue or more income for your company in itself than by selling the machine itself. So very many machine manufacturers, if you look at the potential of what they can be selling, obviously there's gray markets of spare parts and so on, but spare parts is not really a focus for very many companies. But very many machine manufacturers should really call themselves spare part manufacturers, simply because they can create far much more wealth for themselves by actually supplying spare parts rather than producing the machinery. Obviously the machinery needs to be produced in the first place to sell those spare parts and so on, of course, but the servicing teams are really underestimated in what potential they actually bring and what value they bring to the revenue stream or can bring to the revenue streams of the companies themselves and the machine manufacturers.
And really, you mentioned wealth, but that's profit.
That's profit, and it's wealth as well, right? Because it's not only many machine manufacturers in these days are struggling because machinery is expensive. We're going through economic cycles, hence there's a downturn. Machines are not really being bought, right? So the lifetime of the machines gets extended if there's an economic downturn. So in the mining industry, for example, if mining goes down, if your machinery park is still working and it looks okay, you go into higher risk, hence you extend the lifetime of the machine. Which means you're not going to buy a new machine, maybe for a certain period longer you're not going to buy a new machine. This of course has an impact on the revenue streams of the manufacturer. Servicing, however, will always take place. So even if you offer the service to remanufacture machines, so you take them into your servicing stations and you exchange everything within the machine that is important to be exchanged, so it's close to new machine, is a revenue model that in economic downturn is very much value to the customer as well. Again, if you understand the business model and if you understand the troubles of your customer, you can move the customer very much closer. If the customer has the feeling that you really understand him, you have the opportunity to obviously as well secure future business.
How interdependent are these relationships? It must create loyalty with the manufacturer.
Yes, it creates a lot of loyalty. And I think the interesting part is often when we, for example, when I choose a restaurant, right? I choose a restaurant and I have my favorite restaurant because the people are nice and I like the food. with servicing and products, it's very much similar, right? The product actually does what it's supposed to be doing, but the people are responsive. They understand my business. I don't have to explain them every time that I can't bring the machine in now because it's a high productive season at the moment. So if I have the feeling that they really understand my pain points and they can help me to run my business better automatically or more integrated, then that's a very, very big plus for me as a customer.
Is there a complexity in these relationships defining what value is, and also whose responsibility it is to nurture these relationships? They're ongoing, they're not one-offs.
They're definitely not one-offs. There is multiple things to that. In a different piece of work, we've talked about value exchange between business partners and indirect value being exchanged. We've started to talk about not only the direct value that you bring to the table, but very much indirect value. You may, for example, make the person you're dealing with within your customer look very good within their company because his machinery park always works very, very well. His productivity is always the best, and so on. So because you work very closely with him, you're actually creating value for this single person internally. Obviously, you're creating value for the company as well, and so different levels on which you create value.
The complexity of the relationships.
Yes, things get very much more complex. Value is very, very intangible in the first place, so it's very, very hard to define. But this is really something that the management should be taking up and should be trying to understand, visualize, map, and try and understand what the customer, for example, creates in value for them and how they can bring that back into the company. So taking the very simple example of customer feedback again, in customer feedback, there's a lot of suggestions how you can maybe help your customer better in running their business. It's kind of a present from your customer, right? If a customer turns around to you and says, I never really understand your bills, right? It would make me more comfortable if the layout of the bill would be better. So it's a present from your customer. He doesn't turn around and say, well, I don't want to do business with you in the future anymore. It's just something where he's concerned about. If you answer these questions to him and tell him, look, you've given me this feedback, I'm going to change my billing layout, he will be responsive if he gives you feedback in the first place. So of course it's complex, it's more work, but in the long term, we do know that companies with happy customers, and this is as well the product, but as well the servicing cycle, are going to be more committed to do business with you in the future. They will be creating far much more value.
And what about revenue streams? Does it create, you mentioned earlier, that it can create, even in downturns, new revenue streams. Any concrete examples of how companies have innovated and produced value?
Yes. So, for example, Caterpillar have started to do process outsourcing, which means we consider this kind of a higher form of servicing, right? So one example would be quarries. So in quarries, fuel is one of the biggest consumables, right? So if you can optimize the outgoings of fuel, you're actually in a very, very big win situation. So if you want to optimize the use of fuel, you have to understand how much fuel is actually going through the machines and at which points they actually use the most fuel. So in large-scale trucks, as they're running in quarries, that's usually through a gear change. So as soon as a gear changes, there's a lot of fuel going into the machine because there needs to be a lot of power being created. So if you can prevent a gear change, then that's a very, very positive thing in a quarry. Which means, however, in return, that you need to actually run, optimize the haul roads. So the way that the truck goes up the haul road out of the quarry is a very, very important aspect. So if the haul road is wet, then the tires sink in, more fuel is being consumed. If the haul roads are too steep, then there's a wobble in it, then that's not very good because you're going to use more fuel. You can inform your drivers about how much fuel they're using, hence you can incentivize them to use less fuel. There are three aspects, pretty much, on which you can enact on reducing fuel consumption. If you monitor that right, you can enact on all three of them, hence you can give a feedback to the driver saying, hey, you've been really, really good using least fuel in comparison with all your colleagues, and you can maybe make a prize or whatever. On the haul roads, you can actually maintain your haul roads in a way that fuel reducing. So if there's a wobble in the haul road, like we said earlier, then combining the GPS data with understanding how much fuel is going through the engines, you can exactly pinpoint the point where there's a problem in the haul road, and you can obviously maintain the haul road.
So it really does lead to these efficiencies, but there's also networks of partnerships of what you term ecosystems. How important are they?
They're very important, actually, and they're getting more and more important. So when you deliver a complex service, so for example, if you're actually delivering something like this, it's quite likely that there's going to be capability that we have to actually get in where maybe another partner is better. So it would be important to actually take these companies in and let them do their work if they're more efficient than my company is. I suddenly get multiple companies involved in the same contract, pretty much a business ecosystem. So it's multiple companies working together to actually deliver a service to their combined customer, where then it's, and this is the complexity that then comes out of it, there's other contracts where they may be competing, but this is a contract where they actually have to work together and create the most value. This can obviously bring a lot of quite some friction and, yes, some interesting side effects within this in services.
And outsourcing, that's also significant, isn't it? Because you don't necessarily need to own the machine anymore. As you say, these relationships develop over time. The manufacturer, the customer are becoming closer, and you can bring in partners as and when you need them. You can outsource.
Yeah, outsourcing is getting more and more important. So many companies don't want to actually hold the machinery anymore and hold the value of the machinery in their books. So what they do is, if I'm a customer to a machine manufacturer, I turn around and say, I would like to actually outsource the keeping of the machinery and the processes behind it. I would like to actually leave that with you, and I would like to only, so to say, either rent the machinery of you or rent the value that the machinery creates for you. So outsourcing is getting more and more important.
Do assets need to be owned any longer?
Ownership of the machine is not really something that the customer in themselves is normally interested in. So if I'm a quarry company, I'm usually into trading material. I'm not into owning assets and optimizing assets. This is coming back to outsourcing again. This is a part which is not to my core business, hence I would like to outsource it.
If we now have a look at the new relationships, you end up by saying customers and manufacturers can create value through service offerings. There can also be innovation, and you can capture value. It's a win-win if manufacturers now go down this road.
So it's really a win-win situation where the whole of the process of production gets far much more efficient by actually combining capabilities and optimizing these capabilities.
And what proportion of the manufacturing sector now offer services? Is it mainstreamed? How mainstreamed is the servitization of manufacturing these days?
It's getting more and more mainstreamed. So there's more and more manufacturers at least thinking about it. So specifically from the Service Alliance, we get a lot of requests now from customers and as well unexpected manufacturers who are thinking at least about strategizing in the area of servitization.
Florent Ermester, thanks for talking to the Cambridge Service Alliance about your new jointly authored paper, Engineering Services, Unpacking Value Exchange. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
For me.